A number of years ago, I purchased this 10 CD set of Mozart piano concertos. And I'd like to say that I have listened to all 10 discs many, many times, and that I've really reveled in this music. But the fact is, I listened to the first CD, and then I happened to set it aside, and then it was packed up and forgotten. Until recently, when I was preparing things to come up here to Lebanon, and I found it. Now, lately, I have been digitizing all of my CDs, and I thought it would be nice to have them on my iPod, and that way I could take them wherever I was going and listen to them at my convenience. And I decided that I would digitize Mozart. Now, you'll notice, if you can see this, this is a box. It's not your traditional plastic container. And each CD comes in a nice little envelope. And each one features a picture of Murray Pariah, the pianist. And so I would reach in and pull out the disc and pop it into my computer, and voila, I had the music. So I did this for the first disc. I did it for the second disc. I pulled out the third disc. Imagine my surprise when I discovered J-Lo, I'm Real. It must have been almost as great as the person who bought the Jennifer Lopez CD and discovered she had Mozart. I immediately looked at the other CDs, and I was relieved to find the proper discs were in the sleeves. But my expectations, what I thought I would find there, had been thrown a kilter. I was stunned. I was surprised. There was even this little moment of cognitive dissonance because I knew what was supposed to be in the package, and it wasn't there. I suspect that the women felt the same way, although in a much more intense and fundamental way, when they approached the tomb. Now think about it. The first thing they saw was the rock had been moved away from the entrance. They must have had all sorts of questions. Who did this? Why? When it had happened? But those questions were soon overwhelmed by a much bigger one that must have arisen when they looked in the tomb. And what did they find there? They expected to find Jesus, but instead, nothing. They were perplexed. They were confused. All of this was happening in the midst of their despair over the death of their friend, their anticipation to honor him by anointing the body. But now they have this huge mystery. Surely they wanted answers. And lo and behold, answers appeared in the form of those two men wearing dazzling white clothes. Now, that's the kind of detail that makes the story come to life. It makes it seem real. It's the kind of thing a reporter would add. Surely this affirms the veracity of this account. There's only one problem. All four Gospels have different versions of who was there. Mark says it was a young man. Matthew says it was an angel. Luke has these two figures. And John has two angels. There are people who seize on these differences and say it proves that this story is not true. Because surely, if it had happened, everybody would agree. There's only one problem with this line of reasoning, and that's that it doesn't hold up to real-world experience of how people see and witness and perceive events. I know this from my own life. For many years, I had the pleasure and sometimes great amusement of helping a friend who was a professor of law during his criminal procedure class. Every year, I would burst into Dan's classroom and I would threaten him. Sometimes I had a baseball bat, sometimes a water pistol, other times a cricket bat. I would yell at him. I would tell him he had to repay me, or he needed to stop fooling around with my wife, or some sort of nefarious thing he was doing. And then I left. About 10 or 15 minutes later, I would return to the classroom. And the students who had been asked to ID the perpetrator would get to compare what they said, what they witnessed, with the reality of who I was. There were students who said I was 6'2" and weighed 165 pounds. And God bless them, I love them. I was never as fond of the kids who said I was 5'4 and weighed 210. There were people who said I had brown hair, some who said I had black, some red, some blonde. Sometimes I had blue eyes, sometimes hazel, sometimes brown, sometimes green. Apparently, I wasn't always wearing my glasses. I even had a beard on occasion. You see what's happening here? All of these people were present for the event right then and there, and they differed on the details. But there's something else about this annual ritual that I remember. And that was years after the event, I could be walking across campus, and students who had been in that class would say, "I remember you. You're the guy who broke into Professor Melcher's class." They may have differed about the details, but they all remembered the central event. And when we read the Gospels, we see that all four of the evangelists agree on the central event, that there was an empty tomb, that something had happened. And there's more that supports this story. I don't know about you, but if I were making it up, I don't think I would have had the disciples be so skeptical. I don't think I would have had them say, "These women sound like they're babbling." I would have had them all say, "You're right. Of course that happened. Surely what you're saying is true." And furthermore, no offense to the women present, I wouldn't have had women as the witnesses, because in that time and place, women were not considered to be valid witnesses. So I would have had some men. But reality doesn't always mesh with our vision of what should be. And so those three women were present that morning, and they did discover the empty tomb. They were perplexed, and those men in dazzling white garb, men that we can presume were angels based on the context, based on the way Luke tells his story and his gospel, they provide an answer. And they do it in a most wonderful way. They ask a question. "Why are you looking here? He's gone. Don't you remember what he said? He would be put into the hands of sinners. He would be crucified. And on the third day, he would rise from the dead." And at that moment, the women remembered, and they began to understand what had happened. So they went off to tell the disciples. And as we know, they were greeted with skepticism. Our lesson read by Barry describes the reaction of the men. The disciples thought the women were engaged in idle talk, telling an idle tale. But the Greek is much more pungent. It says that it sounded as if they were ranting like somebody who was in a delirium. In short, that they were crazy. And there's a delicious irony in all of that, because one of those three women was Mary Magdalene. And when Mary first met Jesus, she was out of her mind, possessed by demons. And Jesus was able to heal her and free her. So now, she may have sounded like she was off her rocker, but she wasn't. She was just ecstatic and excited. She wanted to share that good news. One of the disciples listened closely. One of them decided there might be something to investigate here. And that disciple, of course, was Peter. Peter, who had just a couple of days before denied his Lord. And he was living with that anguish and that guilt. But this is also Peter who was the first to recognize that Jesus was the Messiah. Peter, who had seen Jesus teach and preach and heal. He had seen Jesus perform miracles. And he had seen Jesus take a group of random individuals and forge them into a community that was able to share the most intense experiences life could offer. Peter knew that with Jesus, all things were possible. So off he went to the tomb. And when he got there, he found the same thing as those women. Nothing. He didn't even have a couple of angels to clue him in on the situation. Just a couple of strips of cloth. He was amazed. And he went home, and he pondered what had happened. Now, for Peter to take the time to go and sit and contemplate anything was somewhat out of character, because Peter always liked to do things. Remember, just before on Maundy Thursday, Jesus had said he was going to wash the feet of the disciples, and Peter, with his normal gusto, said, "No way. You're not washing my feet. You're the teacher. You can't do this." And Jesus told him that if he wanted to be one of his followers, he had to let him wash his feet. So then Peter, with his normal gusto, his desire to double down, said, "Okay, I'll wash your feet and everything else." Peter, who wanted to rush in and do, recognized at this moment that something huge had occurred, and he needed time to figure out what it was all about. I believe that when you and I are confronted with that same reality, with the news of the resurrection, we too should be amazed. We too should stand back in awe and wonder. If we don't, if we think there is nothing here to excite us, that we already have heard the story, we listened to Barry read the lesson, we're singing the hymns and paying attention, we've experienced God in our lives, if we think we already fully comprehend the magnitude of what happened on Easter morning, then I think we are denying the reality that Jesus broke forth from that tomb and conquered death. And instead, we have started the process of entombing Jesus anew, putting him in a place where he is safe and manageable, where instead of us following him, we try to make him serve our own purposes. And when we do that, we deny and deprive ourselves of the full measure of God's glory and love and grace. And Easter is all about bathing the world in that love. We should allow ourselves to bask in it. There are wonderful parallels between this Easter story and the birth narrative earlier in Luke. You may recall that when the Christ child arrived, angels appeared in the sky and announced the good news to some shepherds. Here, when Jesus experiences new birth, a new life for us all, angels are once again present to share the good news. And when Jesus, the Christ child, arrived, the shepherds responded by leaving that place and going off to share the wonderful message. And here, those three women, Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of John, all do the same thing. They go off to share the news with the disciples and others. And despite their initial reaction, the disciples will go out and do the same. They will recruit new disciples and apostles, and people will share the news throughout the Mediterranean and down the centuries, all over the world. Right until this very moment, at this very time, in this very place here in the Upper Valley. The news they shared that morning, Jesus Christ is risen today. And we share that message again. Jesus Christ is risen today. Alleluia.